I'm Katie, mom to two littles and four angel babies.
And I'm Sarah, an advocate for moms and children of all backgrounds and family types.
With two PhDs between us and collective decades spent unraveling how society shapes women's experiences, we're here to shred the rule books and their relentless tide of expectations. In this safe space, the complexities of motherhood find the candid, unfiltered voice. We're Undefining Motherhood, one conversation at a time. If you've ever navigated the emotional maze of infertility, then you know all too well how hard the experience can be from beginning to end. If there's ever even really an end, which quite frankly, I don't think there is. In today's episode, we're peeling back the curtain on this topic close to so many of our hearts, navigating infertility and motherhood after it. We're missing Sarah today, but she wanted to really let our guest's voice have plenty of space to shine. And believe me, friends, it does. In this episode, I'm chatting with Alex Cornsweet, who's not just survived the infertility roller coaster, but has turned her pain into a purpose, helping others navigate this complex journey. Alex is a work-from-home mom of three boys after years of infertility, recurrent pregnancy loss, surrogacy, and more. You probably know her best from Instagram, where she speaks openly about her path to motherhood and life as a mom at Our Beautiful Surprise. Today, we're digging deep into both of our experiences, the goods, the bads, and of course, all the parts that no one talks about. So whether you've experienced infertility, parenting after it, or just love someone who has, this conversation is for you. Full of raw truths, hard-earned wisdom, and maybe, just maybe, a path forward. So for the past few episodes, we have been talking so much about the advice that moms receive during and to their journeys to motherhood. And, you know, we've covered just not even scratched the surface, really. We've talked about things like just relax when you're trying to conceive and, oh, enjoy every moment when you have a little one. And as you and I both know, Alex, like this goes on and on. I am so excited to have you on the show today. You have been through such a journey. And so we're going to hear a little bit more about that, learn a little more about you for anyone here who doesn't already know you. But first of all, I would really just love to hear from you. You have been through so much over the past decade of your life. Is there a piece of advice that you have received that stands out to you as like the most regular, the most hurtful, the hardest to contend with? I want to hear your thoughts on that because I know you've gotten so many different things.
Yeah. Thank you, Katie. I'm so excited to be here with you too. So I just want to say thank you for having me on here. I've been looking forward to it. First of all, I think just because I've been through, I won't tell my whole story because it could take forever, but I've been through IVF and canceled cycles, failed transfers, recurrent miscarriage, surrogacy, spontaneous pregnancy, pregnancy after loss.
All of it. All of the gamut, including spontaneous, healthy pregnancy after all of this, including after surrogacy.
Right. So like, and then all the blood tests and all of the like monitoring to make sure I stayed pregnant after because of recurrent loss. So I have like a very unique path to parenthood. But with that, I absolutely agree that there are always people that want to give you advice. And no matter how much you tell people what you need to hear or what you want, I feel like there are just some people that can't listen or can't hear you. And so for me, I think the most frustrating thing is not even a specific piece of advice that people give, but it's more when you tell them what you need in a moment and they ignore you.
Yes.
Like that's, to me, one of the most frustrating things. Because like if I say, I just want to be left alone, and then people think that they know what I need better than what I am telling them, and then they don't leave me alone, it's just so frustrating.
Yes.
Because like I'm literally giving you exactly what I need and you're still ignoring
me. Yes. Yes. And so for anyone who's listening, let's say they're supporting someone who says, hey, I'm in a hard spot and I just need to be left alone. What does that mean for you? Does that mean don't even send me a text message? Or does that mean like don't knock on my door and expect me to be excited that you took the time to come visit me?
So I think part of the big difficulty also with that, though, is that that's a big thing. Like, you need to figure out what works for you and how you want to be supported, because every single person is so individual with how they want to be supported. And I do totally understand that it's really difficult to support people through these situations because they haven't experienced it themselves. However, what I've found is that the people that I've like stayed close with throughout it and the like closest friends that I have are people that understood, first of all, that me not being able to show up for them in certain situations is not about them. It's just that I can't even be there for myself. And so that this is just a season of life. There will be other seasons where I can be there for them, but that was not that moment. And also just text me. Like, one of the things that I liked the most, and I think that this is pretty, most people in the infertility community will say this, that just send a text. And the wording that I always suggest to people is something like, hey, I'm just checking in. I just want to say I love you. I'm thinking about you. Do not feel obligated to respond to this.
Yes.
Like, I'm here no matter what. And that's it.
I knew that is what you were going to say, because I think this is what I tell people. I don't care what someone is going through. If they are struggling, if it is infertility, if it's pregnancy loss, if it's, you know, postpartum, it doesn't matter what the struggle is. I think there's so much power in the no reply needed. Just wanted to let you know whatever you want to say.
Because I think that people can feel guilty because they know that people are coming from a good place and want to help them.
Yes.
And so then it almost becomes like the person that's hurting feels like it's their job to make sure that nobody else feels bad about it.
Yes.
Like, one of the hardest things about going through, like, for example, a miscarriage was telling people bad news.
Yes.
I hated having to, because a lot of times they knew I was pregnant. So, or knew I was trying to get pregnant. And so to have to make the calls of either it didn't work or it didn't work anymore, or we just lost the baby, like, you don't want to have to make those calls. I mean, it actually got to the point for me where I would call like my parents and be like, you tell the rest of
them. I literally just sent text messages.
I was like, I don't really care if other people know, but I don't want to tell them myself.
Exactly. And this reminds me of something, you know, we see this so often because you and I both, we talk about loss a lot on Instagram and have big communities there and then follow other people who do the same. And I'm thinking of a couple of people specifically recently who are kind of larger influencers, for lack of a better word, but really people who are there to be support systems for others who have been going through their own fertility struggles, their own loss struggles, or their own pregnancy and postpartum struggles. And when something traumatic happens to them, I was in a way lucky in that I didn't find this world of social media until after I had gone through everything. So a lot of these people we're watching go through it live. We feel like we're going through it with them. I mean, I know I'm checking Instagram for beta results 20 times a day. And then when they come on with horrible, traumatic news, and you and I know so well personally how devastated and heartbroken they are, we hear them saying things like, I'm sorry I haven't been keeping you updated, or I'm sorry I haven't responded to all of your DMs. And I think that speaks so much to it. The person who is grieving should not have to shoulder the burden of responding to anyone. And I love this idea of just giving that permission. I don't need a response. I just want you to know I'm here.
Yeah. And I think with that, that's a really good point with social media, because so many people are sharing. I'm also, you never have to share ever if you don't want
absolutely
to
the beginning. Not.
And a big thing for me that I think is something that I would tell people close to me as well is that I can want to share every single aspect of what's going on with me today. And then tomorrow I can decide that I don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my choice. Like, I don't have to feel the same way about it every single day. And also, for example, I gave my family permission to like tell other family members or friends so that I didn't have to. However, if someone, like for anyone listening, if anyone ever tells you that they just had a miscarriage or anything that they're grieving, you should not tell anyone unless they explicitly gave you permission to, because it is not your story and it is not your news. And maybe they just wanted to tell one person and maybe you're that person. And there's no reason for you to talk about it with anyone else. And so, and that was always something like, don't spread other people's bad news. Like, why would you do that?
I feel you so much on that, because I feel like I did it kind of the way you did it. I would tell a couple of people and then be like, please let everyone know, because I don't want to have to keep sharing the news. But that is me setting that expectation and that lack of boundary. And it is hard. Like, boundaries become such a big thing when you're grieving or you're struggling in motherhood in general, right? Like, boundaries become really a crux of your own mental health and emotional safety and that of your family and your children. And when you're in those spaces, it can be really hard to set them. And so I think it's very helpful for support people to assume them wherever they can. Unless you are asked to do something specific, assume the boundary in terms of things like not sharing, but also in terms of things like, I will always tell people, I remember telling a friend once, I just dropped a dinner off on your porch. And I had told her I was bringing dinner that night, but I didn't tell her when I was there because I didn't feel like I didn't want her to feel like she needed to see me. And she actually said, oh, I wish you'd told me. I would have loved to have seen you. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting, because I felt the opposite.
Yeah. So see, that's actually really interesting, because like, I've done that for friends before, and I will say to them, by the way, I'm not trying not to see you, but I assumed that you don't want to socialize right now. And the majority will say, thank you, I didn't want to socialize right now.
I think that is the most common.
And I think dropping things off, yeah. But you give them the option and you say, like, I can come hang out with you if you want, but I don't want you to feel pressured because this is your thing. And so when you're talking about that, though, so like, I have created this program for moms who have gone through infertility or are currently going through infertility. God, we need that. Thank you. I'm just so passionate about it because I feel like it's something that I wish I had. Mm-hmm. And it's for people who are either done building their families or for people who have one or multiple kids but still want more kids, because being a parent and going through infertility is just so difficult. And a lot of times there's this misconception that once you have a child that infertility does not exist anymore, and that is just not true. Like, there's just so many reasons. And so the first step in my program is actually focusing on moving beyond trauma and identifying what they've gone through and talking about their specific experiences, because it's so, you cannot move forward if you don't acknowledge what happened. And then also with that support aspect, I think that while we can tell people who are doing the supporting, like, this is what you should do, this is what you should do, I also think there's something to talking about to the people who have gone through it with, like, okay, let's talk about the people in your life and set expectations for what's realistic about what's going to happen.
Yes.
And then let's identify the triggers, and then let's identify how you're going to deal with those triggers, because they will come up. And if we have a game plan for how to deal with the triggers, it doesn't make it as overwhelming and blindsiding, because it still happens.
This episode is sponsored by Genate by SNP Therapeutics, providing genetics-powered nutrition tailored for every stage of the fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journeys. Navigating pregnancy and motherhood comes with its uncertainties, but the Genate test gives moms a level of control over their own and their baby's health that they've never had before. It's more than just a simple cheek swab at home. It's a window into understanding your body's unique nutritional needs. Their tests made me feel so empowered. Not only did I learn I don't process folate or choline as effectively as some people, but I also learned what to do about it, what daily values I need compared to standard prenatal recommendations, what additional nutrients could help me absorb the ones that were harder for me, how to choose the best foods or supplements depending on my lifestyle to make sure I was getting what I needed. Their test isn't just a scientific breakthrough, it's a personal journey to better health for you and your baby. It's empowering to have this level of insight. Every mother deserves this kind of personalized care. Learn more at undefiningmotherhood.com/genate and use code undefining10 for 10% off. there are so many ways we can take this, and I think we need to take it both of these two different ways. So a couple of different things come to mind when I'm listening to you talk right now. One of them is the triggers from our past. So let's say we're finished trying to grow our families. I am finished trying to grow my family. I believe that you also are finished trying to grow your family. So we're similar in that place. And sometimes a baby shower announcement or invitation still stings. And sometimes it does not at all.
Yeah.
Sometimes it brings great joy. So there are these like triggers from our past. So I want us to talk about that. And then there are also the unexpected triggers of you when you have living children, you parent differently, you worry differently. You find these experiences impacting not just elements of what you think of as your past life, but how you relate to your children. So let's go chronologically, right? Let's start with those triggers that just take us back to that time. What are some of the biggest ones you're seeing in your community or in your own experience? And let's talk about working through those.
I think a few of them are what you said. Pregnancy announcements is always going to be a huge trigger for our community, always. And I think it's the kind of thing where I agree that where I am at now, I used to think it was going to bother me forever. I'm at the place now where it doesn't act like I am genuinely happy for people. And I'm personally at the place where I don't feel like I need a warning before hearing my friends anymore. But that's a very personal thing, because if that's something that you feel like you still need a warning, then your friends should honor that for you. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's, again, setting those expectations, right? So, but with that, I think that for me, it's not necessarily a pregnancy announcement specifically, but it's how it's done. Like if it's almost like flippant, like it's not a big deal and it's so easy to get pregnant. And
yes,
like that still bothers me. And I feel bad because, of course, there's always like this guilt.
There's so much guilt. No matter how you feel, you're going to feel guilty.
But I think it's okay to acknowledge how, and that's where I think how people react to different triggers are so different for each person, for where they are in their journey, and even honestly a day-to-day thing. And some people will say things to me, like another trigger is talking about either how many kids you have or the gender of your children, mm-hmm. because a lot of people in the infertility community do not get to choose how many kids they have. Mm-hmm. They had a certain number in mind and they might not have that many, or it doesn't look the way they thought it would look. Another thing is like the gender. I have three boys and every single day I get a comment about, do I want the girl? And that small suggestion makes me so angry.
Right.
It doesn't really upset me anymore and I just hear it all the time. But what I want to explain to people is, first of all, you don't get to choose gender even if you do IVF.
Right.
Second, I lost three girls. Third, like I can't just get pregnant again if I wanted to. So it's like all of these reasons why that's so inappropriate to say to someone. And also my boys are good. Like I love my kids and I'm happy with my boys and they're enough.
You worked so hard to get to these boys and like you're thankful for them and you're grateful for them.
Yes.
I feel you completely. I have not lived this experience because my living children are one of each. And because I actually did not have to go through IVF, once we figured out some issues, was able to conceive naturally. It took a little while in the beginning, but we got there. And then that was not a problem for us. So it means I don't know the sexes of the babies I lost, although I firmly believe that I do.
Right.
Anyway, like it's this weird thing in my head based on like symptoms and how I felt during each one. I'm like, my first one was a girl. The next three were boys. I lost all of those, and then Jack and then Branham. But, you know, it's so tricky because it's like, it's so unfair to place this expectation on you that, hey, don't you wish you could have a girl to like bring up, even though, because you had three girls. But then also, if someone's experiencing that gender disappointment, like that's also okay. And that's also not something to feel guilty about. So it's also nuanced and complicated.
That's what I was going to say too. Like, I feel like I was originally completely pictured having a girl. And there was definitely a period of time where I had to grieve it, not just for the girls that we actually lost, but in general, the idea of never having a girl, I had to grieve. And I got to the point where I just wanted a healthy child. And I'm so grateful for my boys and we have the kids we have. But there's so many different aspects of it that affect people with that simple sentence.
Exactly.
Because one, you don't, and also when you were saying you felt like you knew the genders, I also think that when you go through a miscarriage, like you still lost a child.
Exactly.
And obviously, like, it can matter to people which gender, but at the end of the day, a loss is a loss is a loss, right? So you don't have to know the gender for it to mean more. And so you still had losses.
Exactly. We have four angels on our bookshelf, and my six-year-old knows that they are representations of his brothers and sisters. And I mean, my two-year-old doesn't because she's two, but she will.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually remember someone telling me the other day about a child in their child's class who their kid had come home and said, like, oh, I think so-and-so was, you know, he must have been having a bad day. I think he was trying to get attention because he kept saying that his sister is dead. And he does have a little sister. And so what this child thought, and what might be true, I don't know. I don't know this child. I don't know their situation. This kid was like, I don't understand. Like, this kid was freaking me out today because he just kept saying this thing, but like, I know his sister. And the mom was thinking of it the same way. Like, should I check on the child? Could something be going on? And I was like, sure. I mean, yeah, that could be. There's an emotional thing going on at home. And maybe the child was looking for attention, or maybe that child does have a sister who is dead. And maybe they're comfortable talking about that.
Right. And that's also where that's where something like with the motherhood during or with infertility or after, like, I don't really think there's an after infertility, but with my program that I work with women, I feel like that is a big, important thing to talk about with what you and your family personally feel comfortable and how you deal with it with your kids. Like, how much do they know of the story? What do you talk about in your home? How open are you? Because there's no right answer about that. Like, there's no right or wrong way to do it. And I feel like everybody has to figure out what they, and even like for us, I did surrogacy. So I talk about surrogacy every day. And my son will know that that's how he was born. And for me, it means that he was so loved and so wanted.
Yes.
And that is what surrogacy is about, is extra, extra, extra love. And I think each of my kids came into this world in their own unique way, and I will celebrate all of it. But then it's interesting watching, because my seven-year-old, because I have seven, three, and two ages. So my three and two don't really know anything yet. And they listen, but they can't grasp it. But my seven-year-old understands a little bit more. And it's just been interesting to hear what his reactions are to certain things. Like, he heard someone the other day say, oh, are you going to have a girl? And he turned to me and he's like, that was so rude. He's like, did they seriously just tell you you should have a girl? He's like, we're enough, okay? And I was like, oh my gosh. Oh,
buddy, yes, you're enough. It was just
like the best reaction. And I was like, yes. I said, hey, I agree. I don't think that's appropriate. And so it was just funny hearing like a seven-year-old's reaction to that. He just like,
oh my gosh.
He could not believe that people actually say that sentence.
Yes. Well, and I mean, going through surrogacy, like, I can only imagine how many sentences you have heard in your lifetime that you can't imagine someone would say until they did.
I mean, there's so many things that people say. That's where social media also feel, you know, they're little keyboard warriors behind their screen. Nobody can see them. But even in person, I feel like people tend to get either, it's weird. When we were expecting him, I didn't really get a congratulations most of the time. It was more curiosity and wanting to know more about it. It went from like, oh, congratulations, you're having a baby. Oh, that's interesting. I was like, cool. Okay. It's still my child. You can still say congratulations.
Yes.
And yeah, it's just interesting. People get uncomfortable with things that they think are unfamiliar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I talk about it though. And so my seven-year-old again, he said, were all of us in your belly? Because he remembers my youngest one me being pregnant. And then he has seen pictures of me pregnant with him. And so he assumes that I gave birth to all three of them. And so I said, actually, no. And so I explained kind of a little bit about it, about as much as I thought he could understand currently.
Mm-hmm.
And his reaction was like, Oh, mommy, that is so wonderful. You got your three boys. That's so great. I'm so happy that happened. I was like, why can't adults react?
Why can't adults react like that? But I think that's such a good point that you bring up, because children have not yet been conditioned to be uncomfortable with other people's discomfort. And sometimes, I mean, like Jack, my sweet little Jack, he is the sweetest, most empathetic kid on the planet. He has the biggest heart, and he will empathize you until the day is done. But he will not show his own negative emotions. Like, he stuffs those down so fast. And that's just who he is. It's who he's always been. At 2 years old, he was not having tantrums when other two-year-olds were having tantrums, because he was stuffing it down, and you could see him doing it. And we were like, don't know what to do about this. That's just him. But I find that even though he's not always comfortable sharing his own emotions, when they're negative, he shares everything that's positive. He's so comfortable with other people's negative emotions. And like, he saw me upset one night, and I kind of came up with a very overgeneralized explanation of why, and basically said, I had a miscommunication with some friends, and they're upset with me, and they think that I lied to them about something that I did not lie to them about, and we haven't yet had the chance to clarify exactly what happened. And so I'm feeling very sad, and that's why I'm crying. And he was like, but mommy, I know that you would never lie to someone. And he just like hugged me and put his head on my shoulder and just basically held me. And like, I think that's what it is. It's that these kids have not yet learned. It's a learned behavior that we are supposed to shush other people's discomfort, that we're supposed to change the subject and find the bright side. And they haven't learned that yet.
And I think with that, that's why, like, when I talk to people and like work through my program about like dealing with what you've been through and the trauma and the anxiety and the guilt and the overwhelming feelings, it's just important to understand that, you know, you don't have control over everybody else around you, but you do have control over kind of prepping yourself and knowing, okay, for example, like if you're going to be in a triggering situation, how are you going to feel about it? It could change every single day, but are you, you know, do you want to deal with it where you deal with it head on? Do you want to deal with it where you just kind of tell them that maybe it's not for today? Or do you just want to avoid it? You know, there's just, and I honestly don't think, while I think that avoiding things, you know, you don't want to avoid how you're feeling about things, I think certain situations, it's okay not to go to things. It's okay to say no. And that's protecting yourself sometimes. And my big thing, and like when we were talking about triggers of baby showers, for example, if you are being triggered by that, and it's a good friend, they should understand that there are plenty of other people to celebrate with them right now, and that you still can't, like what we all say, you can be happy for them and sad for yourself.
Yes, exactly.
And so just being comfortable with that is a big deal, because I think a lot of people, they want to make other people comfortable, right? So when you were saying like people don't feel comfortable if other people are uncomfortable, or they don't feel comfortable with uncomfortable feelings, I think that even goes when we're talking about ourselves.
Absolutely.
Like, sometimes I think people, and I think people hold things in because they don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable. So I think working through those feelings and figuring out like what you're going to be comfortable saying, what you're going to be comfortable doing, how you're going to deal with certain situations is important, because if you don't know how you're going to deal with it, then everything feels surprising. Yes. And everything feels overwhelming.
It's so important. And I think it's also important to know, well, like speaking of things like baby showers, a lot of times people aren't comfortable saying no. And like, I want you to feel comfortable saying no. In fact, I actually have scripts for saying no to baby shower invitations. Yeah. So I'll put those in the show notes. But I think it comes back to what you said a few minutes ago. It doesn't have to be the same every day or every time, or with every potentially triggering situation. So maybe today you really don't want to go to that dinner with friends where they're going to bring their children and you're going to be reminded of what you're trying to have.
Right.
And then maybe in a few weeks, you really would love to see that friend and their children. And it's okay for these feelings to adjust and for these feelings to change. And it's even okay to say, you know what, I'm going to accept this invitation, but I want you to know I am going through a hard time, and it's possible I'm going to need to choose to change this RSVP closer to time. I hope I don't have to, but that might be a thing. And it's okay to prep people for that and give yourself that grace.
And honestly, that applies to motherhood.
God, yes.
Completely also. Like, I feel like that's something where when you're, I think part of the issue with going through infertility to become or loss to become a mom is that then when you are a mom, you feel like you're only allowed to be grateful all the time. You're not allowed to have any of these feelings that you have. Like, I had so much more anxiety than I've ever had in my entire life because I was afraid of something happening to my children, which I did not expect to feel, because you think, well, it took so many careful, little, tiny, everything perfect to get them here. So one thing could take them away, and that's terrifying all the time.
Yes.
And so I think working through that anxiety of being honest about how you feel, but also even things like when I hosted a birthday party for my kids and then invited friends that also have young kids, when they say, you know what, I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to go, like, I don't know how my mom day is going to be going, right? Like, I don't know how my kids are going to be that day. I don't know if we're going to be able to come. I am always like, oh, just decide the day of, it's fine. Like, I don't really, you can just let me know.
Exactly.
Because you just don't, like, you don't know how you're going to be feeling for triggers when you're going through things. But also as a mom, you don't know how your kids are going to be feeling.
Yes.
Or you don't know if you're going to be, like, some days as a mom feel easier and lighter, and some days feel heavier and harder. Like yesterday, I kept getting into fight after fight after fight with my 7-year-old, and I felt like the worst person in the world. But it was like, I had to still handle it. Like, I couldn't let him just get away with whatever he wanted, right? So, and he was just having a day where he was having a harder day too. And then there's the repair of, you know, everything of like,
oh yeah,
okay, well, I had a hard day. You had a hard day. I take my responsibility for what I did. I'm sorry, but you still are responsible for what you did.
We have to grant ourselves this permission to understand, you know, it makes me think. So my son and one of his best friends have birthdays that are just a couple of days apart, but they have different friend groups because they are now at different schools, but they have some friends who overlap as well. And so last year, their birthday parties were on the same day. And so this other little boy's party was in the morning, and then Jack's party was in the afternoon. And Jack literally, like, went straight from one party to another. And I don't remember if I had my husband take him to the first one. I think I might have had my dad take him to the first one because, like, we're getting ready for his own party.
Yeah, it's just a lot.
And there were kids who went to the first party who didn't come to the second but were invited to both. And there were kids who showed up for Jack's who didn't go to the first, but were invited to both. And, you know, afterwards, Jack was like, well, why wasn't so-and-so at my party when they were at this one? Or, you know, he must feel, I'm just trying not to say his friend's name, but, like, he must feel sad that this kid didn't come to theirs and they came to mine. Like, why did they do that? And that was my exact explanation, was like, buddy, you've heard me use the word overstimulating. Because I speak like an adult to my kids. I'm like, birthday parties are a lot for children's brains to take in. Heck, they're a lot for adults' brains to take in.
Yeah.
And so it might not have worked for that child to go to both parties, or it might not have worked for that parent to go to both parties.
Yeah.
Maybe they had other kids with parties to go to. Maybe they just needed to go home and have some quiet time. Maybe they had errands to run. Like, there were so many things. So it's not that someone didn't show up to one of the parties because they like that person less. It's just that days are complicated for the people who are responsible for getting to them to these parties, and they have to decide what's going to work, what's going to fit, what's not. And even just things that, you know, I never knew to think of, like having before I had kids, of like, oh God, how drained am I going to be before bedtime when I'm going to have this overstimulated child who's impossible to get to bed? And what is my emotional bandwidth going to look like? Or is my partner doing bedtime that night? And what is his going to look like? Like, it's just, yeah.
Oh, actually, that made me just think of something. My husband and I started doing this thing recently where we kind of gauge each other of like, what number are you from?
Oh,
like,
I love this.
We originally realized our scales, but it's like, what number are you on the scale of overstimulated, right? Like, do you need, because he, so my husband works full time out of the house Monday through Friday. He always gets up so early. He has to leave before the kids wake up. And then he comes home right before bedtime. He always comes home for bedtime, even if he has to do work later, though, because he's a really good dad. But sometimes he's had a really, 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 really stressful day, or sometimes I've had a stressful day, right? And obviously, sometimes we both do. But we try to gauge, like, okay, who has the capacity to deal with the bedtime more right now? And I think that that's where, like, another thing that I talk to moms about is just the fact that there is no single right way to parent. There's, you know, what looks like thriving for you is going to be different every day. And honestly, sometimes thriving doesn't have to be that picture perfect Instagrammable thing that you see people doing, which is honestly not real anyway.
Right.
But the thriving can literally just be like, you know what? You got through the day.
Yes.
Like, that's it. You thrived today. And that was still thriving because it was a hard day and you still did it. And I will put this in I'll give you the link also for your show notes, because I talk about this a little more in detail, like each of these things we're talking about, just because I want people to have a takeaway of, like, I would love for people to do my program, but the freebie that I'm going to give the link for in your show notes will just give, like, it's a 9-step, pretty detailed kind of get started on feeling like yourself again and working through things.
Yes.
And I just think it's important for people to to understand, like, that what looks like good for them and what works for them is not going to be the same for someone else. And that's fine.
Exactly.
Like, it's different for everyone.
Exactly. You know, it reminds me, we were talking with Eve Rodsky, who wrote Fair Play a couple of weeks ago. And one thing that really stood out to me in that conversation, so many things stood out to me in that conversation, but one that really stood out to me, it was part of Fair Play, for anyone who hasn't heard it, go back and listen to that episode. It's amazing. And the one after it is life-changing for me personally. But the idea is, like, equitable division of labor in the home. And that takes into account, you know, what types of jobs people are doing and all sorts of things. But it also is taking into account something like, you are working a very demanding, difficult job. Like, you have to get a kid up and off and ready to school, and there are three of them. Like, that's a ton of work to do by yourself. Holy cow. And then one of them goes to school, but the other two are not in school all day. So, like, even if they were, that wouldn't make your life easy either. But, like,
they're not.
So, in those, you know, those younger years, in terms of time suck, are even harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what I love about this Fair Play system is that it's bringing, you know, it's giving us a way to sort of account for what everyone is doing and still try to make things more equitable. But what you're saying specifically reminds me of is it comes with a card deck. And if you have children, there are 100 cards in your deck that you divvy up between partners, and the cards can change hands over time. There will be times when certain cards aren't necessary and you can just leave them out of either of your hands. But what she said that really, really sat with me is it doesn't have to be even. It just has to be fair.
Yeah.
So it's not that everyone has to hold 50 cards. It's that you're trying to do what is the fairest for each other. And so I love this number system because it's a way of sort of gamifying that on a nightly basis of who's it most fair for today.
And I think that's an excellent, and that's what it is. It's like, who, and just what's your scale? Like, how overwhelmed are you feeling? And I think that that's also something that I talk to, like, my clients about, because I feel like I want them to understand, like, they do not have to hold all of, they don't have to do every single thing. They don't have to be the default parent all the time. They don't have to be that person all the time. Like, they, it can be both of you that are doing it. If there's two people in your household, which obviously I know that's not the
case.
Right.
But if you have a partner, and if that partner is present, you know, it's different. You know, your partner is deployed, or there are all sorts of situations. But if you do have a partner who lives with you, there are so many more ways we can work on, you know, sharing that load, making things equal, and giving each other space. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Undefining Motherhood podcast. It's been an honor to share this time with you. Remember, you're not just a listener, you're an essential part of our community. If today's conversation resonated with you, I have three simple requests for how you can help us grow. First, subscribe wherever you listened so you don't miss an episode. Second, we'd love it if you could leave us a review wherever you're listening to this podcast, as that's one of the most important ways we can grow and share our message and community. And finally, we'd love to hear from you. Jump over to Instagram and find us at Undefining Motherhood, where you'll see a post about this week's episode where we can continue the conversation. Thank you for being a part of the Undefining Motherhood community, where together we're making change. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.